It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Autumn leaves are falling, and for a lot of us, that means raking. But do we really have to do it? This hour, we'll talk about raking and what to do with your leaves if you do rake. Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, is here. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Charity. How are you?
Very good. And Richard Duran, fresh back from Sioux City, is here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you both so much for being here. And let's talk about that question. And there's been a lot about this in recent years. A lot more people are not raking or choosing not to rake as opposed to just neglecting it. So how do you decide if you need to rake or not?
Go ahead, Richard. It's the amount. If you have several large trees like maples and oaks, you have so much leaf debris, it covers the ground completely. You can't leave that in place, and there's too much to mow, so you basically have to rake it.
If you have just a woodland area, you know, like a very native lawn, some people do, you can leave it go. But most of us have some type of a turf grass on our yards, and that will smother our grass. It's just simple, and they need to be removed if you have grass. And some of your shrubs, it's better with the leaves off than on.
Okay, so if you do leave your leaves, mm-hmm. what can you do to kind of minimize their impact? I mean, we've talked about mulching them or, you know, just mowing them. Does that make a big difference?
Well, if you have a small amount and you have a mulching mower, you can just simply mow those leaves. They'll chop them up into small bits and pieces, and that's kind of going to filter into the turf, and that's perfectly fine.
All right, and then if you do need to rake, now a lot of communities have curbside pickup for leaves now. There are leaf drop-off days in a lot of communities, so you can check with your city or township to figure out what's going on there. But let's say you have a lot of leaves, you've raked them up. Are there things you can use them for in your garden?
Sure, if you bag them with a mulching mower, you can actually keep those for next year and use them as a mulch because you have those shredded leaves, and you can use those in an annual flower bed in the vegetable garden, and it makes a very nice mulch.
Okay, so you can bag them up, keep them in the garage over the winter.
Or outdoors, whatever.
Yeah. Do you have to be worried if they're too wet when you bag them up? That could get kind of gross.
Well, it might get smelly, but typically the best time to mow them would be when they're dry, so they bag better. So I try to do it when it's dry outside.
All right. How about composting them? Is that something that leaves are good for?
Composting is a great way to get rid of a lot of leaves. But leaves take up a lot of space. If you just rake up the leaves and put them on a pile, as you've noticed, they're very large. But if you chop them up, you can get a lot more in a small area, and that just makes sense. So when it comes to composting, that's one of the general rules. If you want more rapid decomposition, particle size has to be smaller, whether it be grass clippings, leaves, twigs, anything you're putting on the compost pile. The smaller the particle, the more fast the decomposition process will take place.
All right, so that mulching mower comes into play again.
Yes, it does. Richard, we may sell a lot of mulching mowers today. But yes, it does. It makes it a lot more handy. And there are a lot of different types of compost systems. You know, there's no one size fits all. For some that have just a small amount to compost, those backyard compost tumblers work well. They don't hold a lot. Their capacity is very limited. But it might be an alternative and produce some good compost for you, perhaps in a shorter period of time.
And let's talk about those compost tumblers quick, because we'll talk about some of the different kinds of compost piles and some of the things that you need to do. The compost tumblers kind of make the job easy of maintaining that compost pile because that's why they're so popular. Although, as you said, they don't have a huge amount of capacity. But what can you do with one of those that kind of simplifies the process?
Well, composting requires three things. It requires the organic matter, such as the leaves and the grass clippings and the other yard waste, and it requires water and oxygen. And without the three components, it's not going to happen either very fast or very adequately. So the compost tumbler provides opportunities to open it up, allow the air to go in, to add a little water, and the tumbling stirs that up so it blends that together so that we have oxygen throughout the entire composting material, and that does speed up decomposition. Now, if you have a pile out in your backyard, in the corner of your yard, or wherever, you have to get good, adequate composting and more rapid composting, you have to take a pitchfork and turn it over regularly. And the more frequently you turn it and mix it and add oxygen, the faster it will decompose. The compost tumbler, by cranking the little handle or spinning the top, the bin, does that for you. So you don't have to use the pitchfork and have backbreaking work. So that helps a lot, the compost tumbler.
All right,
that
so regard. Again, if you just have a small amount, that's a good idea. Now, of course, you can easily build your own compost pile. You don't have to buy something from the store to make it happen. And you just talked about some of the essential elements, but let's say I want to have a basic, low-cost compost pile in my backyard. What's your favorite setup?
Well, you can find some panels, some fencing panels that will keep that together, or you could just make a pile, but the pile gets out of its bounds by having it in a container, a breathable container, not a plastic garbage can. You need a breathable container. So a breathable container or the fencing material works really well. And you want the pile of a fairly good size, no less than 3x3x3, 5x5x5 works well, if not more. So contain it with the fencing material and have one side so that you can enter it to turn it and add more product to it. So some kind of a containment facility is pretty easy to come by.
All right, and of course a containment facility is a good idea, especially if you're using kitchen scraps out there, because it also keeps the critters out, or at least keeps them from spreading the compost across the yard.
That's right, and keeps them from digging in it. So one way to keep the critters away, now that we're on the subject, Charity, is not to put in meat scraps or anything that might feed them. So that's, you can put in kitchen scraps that are vegetative in nature, but not meat scraps or dairy scraps.
Okay, and the meat scraps or dairy scraps, I mean, they don't just draw the critters, but they're not really great for compost either, right?
No, they're not. They don't decompose well.
All right, there are lots of things that we want to toss in a compost pile. Are there some big no-nos that, because once you have a compost pile, you just want to kind of throw everything in there.
Yeah, people have the habit of throwing everything in there, from their old junk mail to to cat litter. But cat litter is a no-no. And some pieces of junk mail are probably a no-no, too. For example, you don't want to put glossy sheets of paper. And you don't want to. I wouldn't put full sheets. You could put shredded paper in there, but not the glossy coated paper, like the Sunday supplements and things like that.
And you said shredded, so not.
No, you could put the whole sheets in, but once again, by shredding it, they'll decompose faster, and you can get more in a small area by shredding it.
Okay.
So that can go in. Twigs, but again, smaller the better. You know, you could put logs on, but they're going to be very, very slow to decompose. So keep that in mind. And then if you have uniform-sized particles, they will decompose uniformly, and your final product of good, usable compost for your garden will be much better, and it won't have larger chunks in it. So the things to put in, you want a blend of what we call the carbon and the nitrogen. The carbon is the dry products, such as your dried leaves, any dried material, the twigs, things like, and your paper, sawdust, things like that. Your green things are your nitrogen, such as green plant materials that you empty your pots from. You know, let's say you have annuals in a pot that have been frosted a little bit and they're still a little green. That's the green material. Grass clippings, green material. Anything green is your green material, as well as some of the kitchen scraps, such as banana peels, old lettuce, things like that. So the green, we need both of those. We need a good carbon to nitrogen ratio in our compost pile. Now, the general homeowner can't measure this, but if we want a 30 to 1 ratio, that's really ideal, because most soils are a 10-to-1 ratio. And so, and as that compost decomposes, two-thirds of that carbon is given off. And then one-third is left in the pile. So there's your 10-to-1 ratio for good garden soil. So what we need is that good combination. So as you're building a compost pile and you want it to decompose and want it to decompose a little faster, there are three things to keep in mind. Have good carbon-nitrogen ratio. add water, but you don't want it too soggy. You want it just so it's like a damp sponge. And then you want good oxygen. And again, by having a container that's or a containment facility that's breathable, that's ideal. Then turn the pile occasionally to stir it up, to move the soil, mix the pile so you can aerate it. So that's the key elements to a good compost pile. It's not difficult, but it does require some work. Otherwise, like some of us, and I include myself in that category, may have what's more like an organic trash heap, where we just pile everything up and just hope nature does its course. Occasionally you get out there and turn it as best you can, but you dig from the bottom and you go for it. So that particular method isn't as efficient.
All right. And I've witnessed that method firsthand. You mentioned moisture. So when you add things to the compost pile, do you also need to water the compost pile?
Yes. If it doesn't rain, you should water it. And people ask, does it need sun? Not necessarily. Usually a out-of-the-way spot's the best place because the compost pile is not the most attractive feature in your landscape. So you don't really need sun in it. As a matter of fact, sun will dry it out quicker. So rainfall, if we get good adequate rainfall, that'll be fine. Problem is if you add too much water, that occupies the oxygen spaces in it and it starts to smell.
All right.
I'm sure many of us have put leaves or grass clippings in a plastic bag. A garbage bag, not a yard waste bag, but a garbage bag. Sealed it up and not thought anything about it. Come back in a couple weeks, you have a horrible smell.
Right.
And that's the smell we get with anaerobic decomposition. And it's a rotten egg sort of nasty smell. So
it's unforgettable. I think we all know exactly what that smells like. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Linda Knave, and Richard Duran, horticulturists from Iowa State University. And they're here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Linda Knave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've been talking about raking leaves. We've been talking about compost piles, but of course, Richard and Linda will answer your questions about all the different plants and trees in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Everett is up first in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Everett.
Hi there. How you doing, Charity?
Good.
Good. Well, I have a big compost pile that with a bin I built myself, and I built it 3 by 3 by 3 feet, and I have a hot compost, and I mix all my garden refuse in, except the tomato vines and my potato vines. Anyway, somebody told me that you shouldn't put sunflower plants in it. Now, is that true? I don't put the roots in it. I cut the roots off, and I chop the rest of it up and throw it in the compost. Is that good for the compost or not?
I think it should be fine. I think they might be referring to maybe sunflowers having maybe allelopathic properties, possibly, where the plant tissue may contain a compound that could interfere with plant growth. But I don't think that's a big deal. I wouldn't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I cut the roots off, and I use the rest of the plants and put it in. And see, I build a hot compost, really hot. I mean, mine is steaming. I put manure in it, everything else that I can possibly get hold of. And I turn my compost, and this is something I read in one of my garden magazines. If I want a quick compost, I turn my compost every 3 days and for 2 weeks. And then after that, I turn it for once every week for 2 weeks. and then I let it set. And I've seemed to get good compost, nice and rich compost. So.
Well, Everett, it sounds like you should teach a class.
Yes.
And both Linda and I should come and take it.
This is just something that I've read, and I've had wonderful compost. And I failed at composting. I've had bins. And it just didn't do the job for me. I gave the bin to my neighbor, and I got rid of it. And this bin, what I built here, just seems to do the job. And I do add leaves into it. But, you know, you're right. You got to make sure you have layers between those leaves. If you don't, those leaves will really pack down.
All right, Everett, thank you so much for your call. And, Linda, I meant to ask you earlier, because here's something else we love to dump in the compost bin, since Everett was asking about sunflower leaves. What about ash? Because people love to empty the grill into the compost bin.
Do not empty your grill into the compost bin. But if you have a wood-burning fireplace, those ashes, as long as you're burning just wood, those ashes in small quantities can go in and go be stirred up pretty well. But you don't want to add large quantities, and you certainly don't want charcoal from your grill going into there. It has some components in it that may not be useful in your plants and may be toxic as well. So I would keep those out of there. Other things that we talked about that shouldn't be put in there is if you feel like, oh, I could put my litter box in there. Any animal waste should not go in a compost pile. He mentioned manure, livestock manure, manure of carnivores, such as your bunnies, if you have bunnies in a little cage, that can go in there.
Not carnivores. I don't know what kind of rabbit you have.
not dog refuse that you pick up as you, along the walk or whatever. So you could put in like bunnies poop. You could put in any kind of animal, such
as chicken poop.
That could go in there to be composted, and it all can be worked very well. We have some laws and regs for commercial producers that are using composted and using animal manure on their food crop fields, but for a home gardener, as long as you work it in the spring and have it well decomposed, it should be safe.
Right. Well, and as Everett was saying, he clearly has a hot compost pile. So.
Yeah, and that brings me to another point, that hot, what is defined by hot? Hot, he's meaning actually temperature hot. As he turns the pile, he is stimulating more microbes to work faster and harder on his compost pile. And as they decompose this product, they give off energy, and that energy is in the form of heat. And so actually on a cold day, you can see steam coming off of the inside of that compost pile. We want it to get heated up, because the more heat, that's more energy given off. We're seeing more microbial activity than a cold pile. And by turning it, you're giving those microbes oxygen that they need. And by turning it, you're mixing previous composted or more composted materials in with the to-be-decomposed materials, and the microbes will start to work on those products. So it's a great way to do it, and a hot pile is a good pile.
All right. Let's get back to some questions. Randy is on the line in Lee County. Hi, Randy.
Well, hello. My question's about two oak trees, a pin oak, 15 foot, and a red oak that's about 40 foot tall. The limbs are close to the ground, and we can't mow underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
When is the right time, or should we even trim an oak?
You can trim them. The best time is basically in the winter, when they're completely dormant, December, January, February. I would wait at least a few more weeks before doing it. The main concern there as far as waiting is oak wilt, which is a fungal disease, and it's spread by a sap-feeding insect. And obviously that insect is not present during the winter months, so it can't do it. So if you can wait and do it at least after Thanksgiving, you should be fine.
Okay. Now, should I trim them right up to the trunk? Is that possible, or should I leave it to like the first knuckle so we could get some leaves over top of the mulch?
Well, as far as trimming off the branch, you don't want to make a flush cut. If you have a large branch, the main branch, and you want to cut it off back to the trunk, don't make a flush cut. Basically, where the branch is attached to the trunk, it begins to flare out as it approaches the trunk. They call that the branch collar. And when you make your final cut, you want to make that final cut just beyond the branch collar. And that's a good cut.
All right. Randy, thanks a lot for your call.
Appreciate it.
Yep. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Dean is on the line in Marshalltown. Hi, Dean.
Good morning. I got a couple questions.
All right.
Is it too late to plant a tree? And also, I've got some creeping Charlie in my yard, and I was listening to your show a few months ago, and there's a chemical I know you need to put on there about this time of year, and I can't remember what that was.
Okay. All right. Well, should we start with the tree question?
As
is it too late?
As far as the tree, if you're talking about an evergreen, like a pine or a spruce, I would say it's probably too late. If you're talking about a deciduous tree, like maybe a maple or a linden, it's not too late. As far as the ground ivy or creeping Charlie, it may be a little bit late for that also. As far as using a product, you want to use a broadleaf herbicide that contains either 2,4-D or triclopyr, T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R, either one of those two. And actually, you have to put it on twice, about a month apart. And so the first one typically needs to go on around late September, early October, and the second one a month later. So at this point, I don't think you have time to do both, so you may not get very good control. But just basically follow directions when you do use it and make sure you get good coverage.
All right, Dean, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your question. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Why is it okay to plant deciduous trees but not evergreens right now?
Because they go dormant, they shed all their leaves, and so they don't have this big water demand. But the evergreens, like your pine and spruce, they retain much of their needles. And so during the winter months, they lose quite a bit of moisture. So when you plant those, let's say in late August or September, that gives them a chance to develop a root system and be able to absorb water before we have winter.
Okay. Let's do some email questions here. This one's from Kevin. Having some browning and losing some growth, mostly at the bottom of an emerald green arborvitae, is this normal? Will it grow out of it since it's at the bottom, or is this a bad sign?
It may be what we call a seasonal needle loss. Most of your trees, like your maples and your lindens, they lose everything in the fall. They shed everything. But your evergreens also shed some of their needles, but only a portion, typically maybe a third up to a half. And so they typically lose their oldest ones, and most of your evergreens do a pretty good job of hiding the fact they're doing that because you just see the outer growth. You don't see the inner growth, the oldest growth. So in the fall of the year, they do shed their oldest growth. It tends to be near the trunk, and so oftentimes you don't notice it, but they definitely do it.
All right, and he has another question. Can you recommend a reliable privacy hedge that doesn't suffer from a lot of problems? Privet, forsythia, lilac, what's your favorite?
As far as a screen, I guess I would look at the arborvitae, and I say that because it's effective year-round. You can't see through it even in the winter months, and there are some really nice cultivars that are very, very upright that fit the bill and do a very, very good job. If you want something deciduous, I guess I would look at maybe lilacs or dogwoods or viburnums.
All right. Here's a question from Kate. The leaves on my neighbor's ash tree are covered with galls. The leaves fall in my yard. Is it okay to add the leaves and all those galls to my compost pile?
Sure. That's not going to be a problem for you. They will probably be decomposed, die in there, and they're not really a problem on the tree right now. Or even in the future. So I would say just go ahead and compost them. Good way to get rid of them. But that was a good question.
All right. Here's a question from Cecile. Is it too late to throw some grass seed on bare spots in the yard? I seeded in September, but the results are spotty and there are still bare spots.
I would say yes. We're basically, next week is November, and the weather at this point is totally unreliable. It could be snowing late next week, so I would say it's too late for that. They could try dormant seeding, where they go out, let's say around Thanksgiving, and just sprinkle some grass seed in the area. And basically what you're counting on that is for the freezing and thawing to work the seed into the soil. And then if we have some nice spring weather as far as rainfall, it might just germinate. It's not a sure thing, but they could try that.
All right. And since she's probably got the seed on hand, that's a great idea to just give it a go, right?
Right.
All right. And this is from Joe in Davenport. And Linda, it's a question you've already answered, but I still want to read it. We have 10 rabbits, and they produce an enormous amount of soil, litter, and droppings. Can we compost these? So, yes.
Yes, and that will tell me the herbivore of the rabbit, when they eat plant materials and not meat and not protein, that is a good source of manure for your compost pile. Just put it on, work it in well, the microbes will go. Will like that product in your compost pile and really help with the decomposition speed and efficiency.
And that's a lot of rabbits.
Yes, is a lot of bunnies.
Back to the phone. Julie's on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Julie.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I have a question about my very stately white pine tree that's about 40 feet tall, and it just drops buckets and buckets of pine needles mm-hmm. on the ground. I've noticed that plants don't tend to like the environment of the pine needles. So I was wondering, are they appropriate to put into a compost?
Yes. Pine needles compost. They compost very nicely. So they're what we'd consider the carbon source, those dried pine needles. So you might want to be sure that they have a high carbon content as well. So you be sure and add some green materials in with it for better decomposition.
And they also make a very nice mulch.
They do.
Because they're lightweight, they don't mat down, so they make a very nice mulch also. I think as far as what's growing underneath the pine tree, I think it's the depth of the material, the shade, and those factors are maybe inhibiting the growth of some of the grass and other plants.
Oh, good to know. I was thinking it had something to do with the acid level.
Yeah. No. They are slightly acidic, but mm-hmm. as far as a mulch, they're not going to change the soil pH because the soil pH is a very stable thing, changes very, very grudgingly.
Hey, good to know. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Julie. 866-780-9100 is the number. Linda is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Hey, my question, I'm wondering about eggshells in household compost.
Eggshells can be added to compost pile. They can. Actually, crumble them up well, work them in. It's a source of calcium if you add it back to your garden soil. So, yeah, crumble them up, sprinkle them on the pile. They're just fine.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. Next, we'll go to Lynn in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Lynn.
Hello there.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, and it's a disgusting one. Some renters were overrun with cockroaches, and they made their little way 60 feet over into my compost bins. So do I have the smelly task of digging all my compost and putting it, getting rid of it, or what can I do?
What did you have going
on? Cockroaches.
Cockroaches.
German cockroaches.
Huh. Well, that's interesting.
Well, I wasn't real happy when I opened up my bin and thought, oh, my gosh, they crawled across two properties.
Are you using kitchen scraps in your compost pile?
Well, my compost bins have been there for, like, 20 years without ever a problem. I've never had a cockroach for 30 years, and some renters threw a bunch of garbage outside. And I wondered where all these roaches were coming from, and lo and behold, after $90 of Raid, I have put nothing in that compost bin that would harm the vegetable. I know grass, leaves, you know, bananas, lettuce, apples.
That's a really
other stuff like.
Boy.
Yeah. So am I now going to be? Is this going to be a breeding source or?
I think I would check with our extension entomologist, Donald Lewis. Give him a call here at Iowa State. It's Donald Lewis. His phone number is 515-294-1101. And the name again is Donald Lewis. This would be a good question for him.
Yes, it would.
All right. Definitely need an insect expert in on this one. Another question a lot of people ask about compost bins. How about coffee grounds?
Coffee grounds can be applied to your compost pile. They break down pretty effectively. People say, well, isn't it high acid? But the volume that you're putting in compared to the volume of the rest of the materials you're putting in isn't that high, and it will help with the decomposition. They do break down pretty readily.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back to answer your questions in just a moment. You can ask your question by calling 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your question. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Carrie is on the line next in West Liberty. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Charity. I have a question. My neighbor used to get spring onions from a relative very early in the spring. So I have this seed variety called Evergreen Bunching Onion, and I'm wondering whether I can plant them this fall for them to overwinter and harvest in the spring. And I'm wondering about doing that with spinach as well.
My answer is if you will... With the spinach, you can get some germination if you plant it in the fall for spring. You'll find some will come up and grow. Percentage-wise, probably not as high as if you spring seeded it. It will come up when it's ready to come up, whereas if you seed it, you'll probably wait a little bit longer. So with the spinach, you might get some coming up earlier than you would have if you would have waited and seeded it in the spring. With the evergreen bunching onions, those are seeded in the spring. The spring onions your friend may be giving you are some of the perennial type Egyptian onions and spring onions that are more of a perennial type onion. The evergreen would be planted in early in the spring, as early as you can get them in and seeded.
Very good. That's helpful. I'll look for those Egyptian onions. Do you have any varieties you can suggest?
I do not, and they're more of an heirloom type plant that it's, you can probably find them on the market if you do a internet search for them, but a lot of them are handed down to friends and family. So find yourself a friend with these, or get a start from your friend who gives these to you, because they are rather fun to grow.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Carrie. 866-780-9100. George is up next in Waterloo. Hi, George. George, are you there? All right. We'll give George a try again a little bit later, or drop the line and call us right back, George. Marty's on the line in Waverly. Hi, Marty.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a frontage of our property is about 300 feet long, and along that frontage I have a row of, I'm going to call them trees. I think they're a small maple, a beautiful leaf color in the fall. But they're very mature. I have no clue how old they are, so I don't know if you guys can tell me what type of tree that is. It's a very small maple colored leaf, and I'm just worried they're getting old, and I'm seeing a lot of dead limbs, and I'm worried about them dying off completely.
Okay, how tall are they, would you say? 15 feet, 20 feet, 40 feet?
Probably 20 feet.
Okay. And they turn kind of reddish in the fall?
Yeah, reddish, orange, just a beautiful, very colorful maple. And my father-in-law looked it up online, looked up the leaf, and he said it was a small maple is what he thought he said.
Okay. I think it may be a Amer or Almer maple. They are small trees. They're not native to this country. But they do develop a nice fall color, from basically kind of yellow to orange to red. The leaves themselves, they're typically three-lobed, where you have this center lobe that sticks out quite a bit, and then you have at the very base two side lobes. So it may be Amer
yep.
or Almer maple.
The leaves smaller?
The leaves,
right, yeah.
The leaves are probably, I would say, maybe 2 inches, maybe 3 inches in length. So they're not huge, mm-hmm. But they're very distinctively shaped. As far as the trees, if you're starting to see dieback in them, I guess that would suggest to me, if I had the space, that I might want to plant some other type of plant nearby, maybe in a row, so that when these eventually do kind of decline and die, I have a replacement in the area. So you might want to consider that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Because you probably can't rejuvenate these, and so if they're declining, I would plan for their eventual demise.
Oh, that's sad to hear, but I understand it's inevitable. Thank you again.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Marty. 866-780-9100. Bob is on the line, almost into Minnesota. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I'm driving back from Iowa here back to Washington State. I'm a master composter back there, and heard your program, was just really fascinated. I had to pull over to the rest stop and call in. Couple of things. I heard you talk about coffee grounds. Coffee grounds are an excellent source of nitrogen for a compost. Okay. And also one big advantage to a hot pile is a hot pile will get to about 150 to 160 degrees, and that will kill any weed seed that gets into the pile.
Oh.
And that's a very good advantage. And sometimes when people turn the pile, they'll see what looks like gray webbing, like there's a big spider in there. And that webbing means that your pile is doing very, very well. That's bacteria breaking down. Also, one other item on pine needles. We have a big pine tree in our yard, and I take the mower and go over those pine needles to break them up. I bag them, and then I dump the bag out and mow it over again and just keep breaking those needles up. If they're not broken, the needles have a casing on them that makes it difficult for those to decompose. But once it's broken, then that decomposes very well.
All right. Well, Bob, thank you so much for all of the tips, and drive safely on your way back to Washington. You can call in with your questions, 866-780-9100. And everything smaller is better, is what you were saying earlier, Linda, so that mm-hmm. rings true, even with the pine needles, huh?
Yes, and I appreciate his comments. He added a lot of good extra tips and right on target, and thank you. Yes, definitely the temperature, 150 or to 180, are going to kill some pathogens and weed organisms, so weed seeds. So that's another really good point to bring out with the higher temperature in your compost pile. And it is not easy to achieve, so the earlier caller, he does a very good job of getting that heat buildup. That's good. By turning it frequently.
All right. Dave is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Dave.
How are you, Charity? Thanks very much.
Yeah, what's your question?
We moved in. It's about blueberry bushes. We moved into an acreage a couple years ago. The bushes, I think, are at least 12 years old. The first year, there were plenty of berries. Last winter, then in February, I pruned them a little bit, not many berries at all. Dick mentioned the fact that, you know, you can't do much at the pH level, so I'm trying to figure out, do I prune them again? Are they too old, or do I do something at the pH level to get more berries?
Well, I think what you need to do possibly is to prune out the oldest stems or shoots. The oldest ones typically don't bear very heavily, and so it's the younger shoots, those shoots that are maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 years old, that bear most of the actual fruit. So if you have older stems in there, they're going to take up space, and they're not going to fruit very heavily. So what I would do is go out there in March or so, early April, and maybe select 3 or 4 of the largest, oldest canes and cut those off near the ground, get rid of them.
Okay.
And that will...
And should I keep trying to...
And keep on doing that on an annual basis. Prune out the oldest growth on an annual basis. And in doing so, that's going to encourage new shoots from the base. And so those new shoots will appear, and they'll start bearing in maybe a couple years.
All right. Thanks.
I heard you say earlier, okay, one more question.
Sure, go ahead.
I heard you say you can't do much to change pH level. is it worth trying to put some stuff in there, aluminum sulfate, to try to change, or is that not worth the time?
Well, it's very hard to do, but you can do it. I would use ammonium sulfate because that supplies nitrogen but also sulfur. And if you do that on an annual basis, a little bit every year, that will supply nitrogen to the plant and also tend to lower the pH. But it's a slow process.
All right, Dave, thank you so much for your call. Next up, let's go to Grant in Marion. Hi, Grant.
Hey, hello. Thanks for taking my call. I know earlier in the show you were talking about leaves being composted, mulched it, or mulching them into the yard. And I have a couple of large oak trees that are on a property that I help to maintain. And I've routinely just tried to mow those leaves into the yard. But I wanted to confirm if I'm doing that with some frequency, let's say every 3 to 4 days, is there a problem with putting that much leaf material into the yard? Will it create a problem, I guess, is what I'm curious about.
Yeah, it shouldn't if it doesn't completely cover the grass. If it completely covers the grass, it may tend to smother the grass, but as long as it's not doing that, it should be okay. So it's basically the amount. So if you can still see the grass, it should be okay.
Okay, yeah, because I try to wait until the leaves are dry and then shred them down with the mower so that it just creates a fine particulate.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Grant. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Let's do a couple of email questions here. This one's from Megan in Des Moines. In the last few years, I purchased a house that has a few year-old smoke trees planted directly under our telephone and electrical wires. The tag that was in the trees said it would only grow to 6 to 8 feet tall, but it seems like the tree is growing much taller than that, and it's tangling in the wires. Can I trim the top of the tree? Will it hurt? Or any other advice?
I think what I would probably do is maybe go out in March or so and prune out the tallest, biggest ones. The smoke tree is actually a shrub. It gets to be maybe at most 15 feet tall, maybe 20 feet. But you can go out if you want to in late winter, early spring before it begins to leaf out and take out the tallest ones, just cut them off near the ground. And in doing so, that's going to encourage some new growth in the base. So you can do that on a fairly frequent basis.
Okay, so if you cut it off the ground, how long before you actually have a shrub again?
Well, you're only going to cut out a few, so you're going to still have most of those. But if you have some really tall ones, maybe just cut out 3 or 4 and leave the rest. And so you're still going to have your shrub, but that does encourage new growth on the base and will make it more compact.
Okay. Another question about compost from Joe in Davenport. How about adding copper pennies and newspaper to a compost pile? Any benefit to that?
I have not heard the copper penny story, so I would say no. But the newspapers, again, you can use the black and white newspaper. It decomposes very well. Don't use the glossy inserts, such as the ads and things like that, or the color paper. I would definitely use the black and white. Tear it up if possible. There was some fears years ago because they used lead in the ink of the newspaper, but newspapers don't use lead anymore. So if there was something people had read that don't use newspapers, it could have been a very old wise tale, so to speak. But, yeah, they're fine. Shred them. They'll decompose faster. And it's amazing how fast in a compost pile you won't see any trace of those newspapers.
All right. Here's a question from Maria regarding canna and elephant ear plants. First time I planted them, when do I get them out of the soil?
As far as the cannas, I would wait to have a killing frost or freeze and actually wait maybe 3, 4, or 5 days after that killing frost. And then go out and cut them off maybe 4, 5, 6 inches above the ground, dig them up, remove most of the soil. You're going to have this big clump of rhizomes. Let them dry for maybe a day or two, and then put them in an open box or crate, and then store them in a cool, dry place. The temperature should be around 40, 45 to 50. And for most people, that's the big problem. Where do you find that location? Mm-hmm. But that's what you're looking for so they stay dormant. As far as the elephant's ear, I would do the same thing. I'll let them basically die back from a killing frost or freeze, and then kind of dig up that coconut-shaped structure, let it dry for maybe a week or so inside, and then bury that in some wood shavings, sawdust, or vermiculite, like in a container. Just bury them, and then store them at room temperature. They should be fine.
All right, and here's a question from Doug. I planted 5 knockout roses in mid-September. One is doing really well, but the other 4, the leaves started turning brown within a week of planting. One of them, the leaves are all dead, but the stems are green. The other roses are in various stages of the leaves turning brown with the stems being green. The soil is mostly clay. I put potting soil around them before planting. Do you think they'll live, or should I plan on replanting them in the spring?
The jury's out. They're probably not going to know it till spring. So I would assume at this point they're still okay, they're still alive, and reevaluate them next spring. If they have died, the stem tissue will turn brown. And so if they turn totally brown, they've lost the plants.
All right, and when is the best time to plant if this isn't necessarily working that well?
They should have done okay, even though planted in September. So spring is ideal if they can.
All right. Back to the phones. Jim in Fairfield. Hi, Jim.
Hi. A couple weeks ago, we were talking about yucca plants and planting them by propagation from splitting the ones that are there. I've got a great crop of seeds on my yuccas. What's the best way to plant yuccas with seed? Do you go direct or put them in a pot, transplant? What's the best?
I think I would try them direct. They have those dark black wafer shaped seeds, and I would
right.
just plant those in the ground in the fall and see what happens. Mark the area so you know where they are, and look for them very next year, but I would plant them this fall.
All right. Anita's on the line in Letts. Hi, Anita.
Hi. I have a question about trimming forsythia bushes. I'd like to know when is the best time, and also mine haven't been trimmed for several years, and they're probably at least 10 or 11 feet tall at the
okay.
top. So
well,
when's the best time and how much can I cut them back?
Well, there's different ways of proceeding, but they tend to be maybe 8 to 10 foot tall shrubs, so they are fairly tall shrubs. You can prune them right after blooming. That way you can enjoy the bloom in the spring, and then as soon as they're done blooming, go ahead and prune them. As far as what you want to do, I would be more selective and maybe prune out some of the older growth if I could and leave some of the younger growth.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Anita. And very quick question, what about adding black walnut leaves to the compost?
You can add black walnut leaves to the compost pile. You could add black walnuts. It's the roots that give off this juglone and some seepage from the leaves, but most of it's from the root system that is then a problem with solanaceae crops. So as you dilute the walnut leaves with the oak leaves, with the maple leaves and grass clippings,
they'll
it'll be
okay.
just fine.
All right. Linda Nave, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Charity.
Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Of red and gold, I see your lips, the summer kisses, the sunburned hands I used to hold. Since you went away, the days grow long, and soon I'll hear